Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome to the CarCast Edmonds podcast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, here with Alistair Weaver. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Matt. How are you?
Good. You know, ready to wrap up the week. It's been good. It's been busy.
Excellent.
I want to introduce
Ferraris,
you guys.
New Aston Martins. It's all V12s. We aren't going to talk about EVs. We're going to talk about trucks. We're going to talk about V12s.
Yes, the opposite of EVs. Before we get started, though, let me tell you guys about Bet Online. Bet Online is the number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB to golf, NBA, and NHL playoffs. You get all the latest stats, news, and scores. They're available for all of your favorite teams. You can get the latest odds and lines, including team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. It's Bet Online, where the game starts. Yeah, welcome to them. Welcome, Bet Online, to the podcast.
Welcome, Bet Online.
Yeah.
It's funny rereading that. There's a great radio station in the UK which used to read the news, and then all of it was easy listening, but it was the same voice. Yeah. So they'd give you some like tragic news was happening somewhere in the world. And then in exactly the same voice, they'd say, "Now here's Elton John with Don't Go Breaking My Heart." And it was just the funniest thing, because there was just no sort of sense of like occasion or intonation. Yeah. It was just like exactly the same pitch.
Well, we'll try to mix that up a little bit. We'll try to mix it up.
All right, tragic.
So yeah, it's a tragic day. Here's Elton John. V12. So Ferrari announces a new front engine V12 car, which are kind of my favorite Ferraris. I'm a sucker for the long nose, front engine, front mid, if you will, style of cars. Aston Martin, you know, what the V12 Ferraris. And I guess Aston Martin didn't want to get overwhelmed or just sort of lost in their news. So they announced their new V12 engine, but without a car. I assume a new Vanquish of some sort. I want to get in the cars into the car a little bit, but it's an interesting thing how, like, well, Ferrari's been doing the 12 cylinders so well for so long. And I know you have experience with more than I do with Ferrari and the V12 cars, but Aston Martin and Ferrari both have a V12 that's coming out, both around the same horsepower ish, right? You know, I don't know, 830, 820. But Aston Martin does it with a twin turbo V12, and Ferrari does it with a naturally aspirated V12.
The Ferrari engine, it's a funny time we're in, because everybody, you could just tell that like everybody's desperate to keep doing this stuff, and they feel like there's more to kind of squeeze out of it. So you've got this, the 12 cylindri, which is cylinders in Italian. And so now this thing's revving to, let me go this way, I think 9,500 RPM, which for a 6.5 liter V12 is kind of crazy. 819 horsepower at 9,250. Torque, as you'd expect, not quite as impressive, but still 500 pounds feet. But wait for it. The peak torque is at 7,250 RPM. So it's probably reasonable to assume this thing will be reasonably peaky, but then reasonably peaky is probably still okay when you've got 6.5 liters of capacity. And it's fair. I did the I think about like V12s. I remember driving like the 550, the 575. 550 was manual. 575 was the flappy paddle single clutch gearbox. Then into the 599, which I was lucky enough to drive across. I did the Pan American route. So I drove on through Bolivia and stuff, which was an amazing journey many, many years ago. And that was flappy paddle. And then you got into the 812 Superfast, which is the predecessor to this car. And I remember going to, so it's a bit like me, but I remember going to Fiorano for the press launch of that car. And it just thinking, this thing's nuts. And this was before they did the Competizione version and everything else. This is like the standard 812 Superfast. And it was almost like it was almost like too fast. Rear wheel drive, nearly 800 horsepower, sideways everywhere. I mean, beautiful chassis, beautifully balanced, wonderful car. But I remember thinking, like, this is too much engine. And,
well,
that, and now we've got this
in the name.
It was like, yeah, and it was just like, wow, this is a lot for the sensors. And now we've got this 12-cylinder, which is even more horsepower. I'd have to compare the weight to the one to the other, but you know, it's obviously not as heavy as an EV or something. So now we have the what, you know, which is it, the last ever V12? If it is, every collector's going to want one, or are we just going to somehow keep spinning out this kind of like death spiral is going to go on and on and on as everybody kind of walks back from electrification a little bit? So I don't know. They're saying it's for the few. It's going to be $500,000 probably by the time you've got it on the road, at least over here.
Yeah.
I'm glad it exists, though. I mean, you can't beat a Ferrari V12. There's something incredibly romantic about it.
I agree 100%. Aston Martin the same way. It's like you get an Aston Martin, and I get it. You get the V8, and they're like, it's an AMG, and it's lighter, and it's more nimble. It's like, yeah, I know, but that's not why I'm getting an Aston Martin. If I'm getting it, like, I'm getting it for the 12.
And give me the 6-liter V12 with, you know, just, yeah, it's.
And if you say it's a little heavier and not as nimble, and maybe even not as quick, I'm like, I don't care.
it's
fine.
And obviously we haven't seen the Aston yet. They've just given us a glimpse of the engine. We can see the Ferrari, which is heavily inspired by the legendary Daytona.
Yeah.
Yeah, which itself inspired the Rover SD1. Remember that car sold in America?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting because this new car, I think this new car looks better as the Spider than it does the coupe. The back is a little interesting with the sort of the big solid glass. It doesn't have like the flying buttresses that, like, maybe was it the 550 or maybe it was the 812 that have it. It just seems a little bit bigger, wider, flatter, the new car.
Yeah, 599 had the big sort of elongated thing, but I agree with you. I mean, because the Spider's got the sort of budget, you know, the Spider's got the what do you call it, the flying buttresses. It's got that sort of almost like a speedster type rear end, but it's. I still don't like it, man. I mean, you know, it's obviously inspired by the Daytona. The nose is very Daytona-esque. But they're saying, well, it's not really a retro car. It's also about looking kind of to the future. And it's just a lot, though. Somebody put it, I can't remember where I saw it, but they'd put a picture of it next to a Daytona. And the Daytona is such an iconic design, but it's an iconic because it's just beautifully proportioned and incredibly simple. And then you look at this, and I know it's aerodynamics and it'll do over 200 miles an hour and everything else. It's another very complicated design. And for me, the really beautiful Ferraris are the, you know, 250 short wheelbase, even through to like the F355 from the late 90s. And then everything since, 456 actually, I thought was a beautiful, beautiful V8 Ferrari.
Yeah.
But, you know, 550 Maranello, 575, they've aged really, really well. 599, I think, is aging well. But again, much simpler designs. It's just a lot going on with this car.
You know, the Roma, to me, was sort of a departure from the typical Ferrari design theme that was going on. And I think there's mixed feelings about the Roma as well. I like it. I don't love it. I think maybe you like it more than I do, but it is interesting.
I like it because it looks a lot like a Jaguar F-Type, and maybe that's part of the problem. It doesn't look exotic enough, but it's just elegant. It's pretty. And I think if you look at the, you know, the legendary Ferraris, even things like the, you know, the GTO were very elegant beautiful cars. And the contemporary Ferraris are just so heavily influenced by aero that they just, you know, if you go back to the 80s and into like that era of the Testarossa and the 348 and all that sort of stuff, it, you know, it all became a bit kind of chintzy and a bit 1980s with the side strakes and, you know, everything else. And then like the 355 brought it back to being beautiful. And now today, particularly the V8s, they're so heavily aeroed and a bit kind of F1-ish and everything else. Whereas the Roma's very elegant and beautiful. But you're right, it seems to be, it just doesn't seem to be capturing the imagination. And I know, you know, some of the use values aren't that strong. People just don't seem to, people haven't fallen in love with it. But
I haven't driven it. Have you driven it?
I haven't driven the Roma yet, actually. No, that's one of the,
I'm sure it's a wonderful, I'm sure it's fantastic to drive. But there's just something about it that's like, feels like Dino to me. Like maybe it shouldn't have the Ferrari badge and maybe it is a little different than what Ferrari was doing at the time, like what it's doing now. But now that you look at the new car and you're like, well, I can kind of see a design trend of the Roma, you know, influencing the new car, the Cilindri. So maybe that's the direction they're going in.
I'm also just not into, you know, I don't, particularly on the road, I just like beautiful, pretty cars that you know, are fast and enjoy driving and sound great. But I don't need to look like I'm supposed to be at the track. You know, I like elegant, beautiful cars. And if you go back in Ferrari's history, that's, you know, particularly when you get back to the 70s and earlier, that's where they were. They were beautiful, elegant, you know, Pininfarina cars. They were fabulous. But I'm sure this new 12 Cilindri is going to be pretty mega, and it's going to be on sale this year. And, you know, I'm glad they built it. I'm sure it's going to sound unbelievable at 9,000 RPM.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's
totally
going to be going down Melrose at 9,000 RPM very soon.
There's this trend of doing this sort of breaking up the color lines, if you will, on cars. Like we have a lot of SUVs that are, you know, white or red, and then the whole top is black, and we're sort of trying to change the silhouette by putting a little bit of color, but not more. And then the black like B pillar and stuff that we see in almost everything now is to sort of give it this impression that it's a single piece of glass between like the front door and the back door. And on this car, on this new Ferrari, they're kind of doing it. Like when you look at the hardtop version, I assume that's a piece of glass that's going on, sort of this weird shaped kind of piece of glass of above you. And then in the back there's glass, but then it kind of where it meets the fenders, sort of these wings coming off the back. I think that's carbon fiber. And then on the Spider, the color stops and the whole rear of the car is just like carbon fiber.
Yeah. And I think that's why I like the Spider. I agree with you. I think the Spider just looks a little bit more elegant and beautiful. The weird thing is that, I mean, both of us are looking at pictures. I haven't seen it in the, in the metal yet. Or in the carbon, and
yeah, I mean, they
some
just
of these cars,
online. I don't
look,
think anybody's seen it.
Yeah, some of these things look better when you actually see the light reflecting on them and the proportions kind of come out. It's just a busy design, particularly around the rear. So it will be interesting. And, I'm sure it will drive sensationally well.
Like, we're on the website. So if you guys are listening, if you want to go to the YouTube version of the podcast, we've got some images up there. But now, like, this image is where Ferrari sort of lets you flip it over and you can see where the glass is more see-through in the back of the hatch and the roof above you. This is on the coupe, and then how it blends into the black. I guess they could have done red. I guess they could have done some different things, but I don't know. It's just a trend. It's just a style trend that I see happening, but they're also trying to match the front. The front has the blacked out piece in between the headlights, like the Daytona did as well. So it'll be interesting. It's like when you see this car and go, it's good in red, but because of the blacked out pieces, do you end up going with a darker color to make those a little bit more subtle? Do you end up going with, you know, like some of their photos are like a dark green or
and also historically the V12 cars haven't looked that great in red. I don't think the 550 looks best in red. 590, partly because they've just got a lot compared to the mid-engine cars. There's just a lot of mass. There's a lot of bodywork. So, and the red, you know, the Rosso Corsa or whatever just doesn't really work as well. They tend to be better in a kind of more understated, hue. Like I looked on Bring a Trailer the other week at, I've always fancied a 599. I used to spend a lot of time driving them and I love them. And they're actually quite affordable. I mean, they're affordable to buy. They're probably not affordable to run, but like 150 grand is still a huge sum of money, but still less than a third the price of one of these. They're an amazing car, but they definitely look better in like a dark blue or something like that. Something a little bit more understated.
It's funny you were saying that. I was at an auction, and I just couldn't stop staring at this. I believe it was a 599. Now that I'm thinking about it, and it was like a blue Note with a Bordeaux interior, and it was just like a little bit dark on the blue side and dark on the red interior side. The blue Note with the Bordeaux was just really nice. When you see the car there in person, before it even goes up on an auction block, just seeing it there under the lights, you're like, I get it. This is such a good color combination. And
there's always that saying, isn't there? You buy your first Ferrari you buy is red and tan. Yeah. And then after that, you never buy another red one. So I don't know how true. I don't know how true that is. But
I don't know, Tour de France
blue or something would be lovely.
I know some guys that have several Ferraris and they've all committed to the red. They're like red. Just every Ferrari they have is red. Mm. And I was like, all right, whatever. I mean, they're a better man than I am because they can buy all those Ferraris. All I could do is bitch about their Ferrari color choices from afar with no Ferrari.
Well, I wouldn't. Yes, I wouldn't have chosen the red myself.
Yeah, which is why I didn't get one at all.
Yeah.
I'm going to pass completely. All right, so Aston Martin. Aston Martin is, assuming they're coming out with a new car, probably a Vanquish or something, but they didn't want
to. Well, they said you will not be Vanquish, so I think they're bringing back the Vanquish name. Yeah, so that's the idea.
That's right. Yes.
And it's funny because Aston has done a deal with Lucid to basically share EV hardware with Lucid. And so they're trying to future-proof themselves, which seems like a smart move to me because Lucid's not having the easiest time, but their fundamental hardware, the motors and everything else is really impressive. The packaging and stuff is fantastic. And so Aston is looking at bringing EVs, but they're kind of saying, you know, maybe the world's not ready, or, you know, maybe that's something we're going to, in the meantime, here's a V12, here's a twin turbo V12.
Yeah.
So I don't, it's hard to know like where they're going with this, whether the EVs, I think the EVs might be pushed back a little bit. And we're hearing that from an awful lot of people. And then they're going to have this twin turbo V12. And, you know, Aston's in a funny place right now. Obviously they've got the F Formula One team, which is doing well. Lawrence Stroll, who made his money with Tommy Hilfiger, amongst other stuff. He's now I don't think day-to-day running the show, but heavily involved. So there's a lot of interesting times ahead. I mean, this is the car company that has basically never made money. There was a period when Ford owned it where they claimed to have made money.
Yeah.
But somebody at Ford told me, well, if basically you can amortize all the R&D across Ford's balance sheet and not your own, then, you know, it's not that hard to look like you're making money.
Yeah. Exactly. When you're using a bunch of Ford parts and stuff, but, you know, if it was making a lot of money, then they probably wouldn't have sold the brand. So
no, there was also this story with DB, David Brown of DB5 and DB6 fame. There was one of his friends famously asked him whether they could have a car at cost. And he said, sure, that's like an extra £20,000. And this was like in the 50s somewhere. But anyway, great. Yeah. It's one of those brands. I think it's been propped up by James Bond forever, but it's in an interesting place right now. DB12, you know, the new DB car looks great. DB12, isn't it? And then V8 Vantage has had a big facelift.
Yeah.
Now this is coming.
Stepped up their game on the interiors. Finally got decent infotainment systems, and And the SUV, the 707, is the newest version is getting that tech as well. So
that's that's just got a much nicer interior. I drove that car and it's a nice thing, but they got burdened with a really old school Mercedes. They did a deal with Mercedes to use Mercedes tech. And then apparently somewhere along the journey, Mercedes basically went, yeah, well, when we said tech, we didn't mean like the latest tech. So suddenly you had a car that was like twice the price of the Merc with yesterday's technology. Yeah. So I remember driving the first time, it was like prodding the screen. It's like nothing's happening. And they built the interior for a touchscreen, but then Mercedes kind of went, I didn't really mean that. So then you were left with like a touchscreen that you couldn't touch.
Like no Android Auto or CarPlay or that, you know, you can get in any car these days. Like it was a no-go for Aston Martin. I can't help but go back real quick and look at, because you had mentioned the Ferrari 812 super fast. And I agree. This is still just one of my favorite modern day Ferraris. I think it looks great and I'm sure it's an animal to drive.
It's an absolute animal, but surprisingly, it's just well sorted. So it's an animal, but a very tameable animal, and proper old school. I mean, even the new one, they've already said, is rear wheel drive. So you've got 800 horsepower, rear wheel drive. So, you know, properly good weight distribution, but properly old school, in as much if you turn the systems off, you know, oversteer is like a toe twitch away, which is awesome fun on a track. And you know, it's just, yeah, I mean, I had a quick look before we came on air, Matt, just like what's a super fast going for now?
Yeah,
they're still 400 grand.
Yeah,
it's such a lot of money.
Yeah, well, look, maybe everyone's going to start selling their 812 super fast because they want to go get the new Cilindri.
Yeah,
so maybe it'll be 385.
And Ferrari is still, by a quantum leap, the most profitable car company in the world. I can't remember the exact statistic. There was a statistic about how many Toyotas they had to sell to make the same profit as one Ferrari, and it was ridiculous. It was like 7,000 or something. I think it was Ferrari followed by Porsche.
Yeah.
And just the margins are crazy. I mean, that's the point. But build a product that people want, and you can charge to a certain extent what you like for it.
Porsche gets it done because everything is just sort of optioned out on that car. It's like anybody that's listening, even if you don't like Porsche, go to the Porsche USA website, grab any car, go to the configurator and build something decent. And you'll be like, I just doubled the price in options. You know, like by the time you get floor mats and a stereo, you're $35,000 into the price of the car, you know? So don't be fooled by the base price of any Porsche. It'll be optioned up, and there's so much margin in those options if you think about it.
Yeah. I'm just looking at Ferrari profit per car. I can't remember. It's a fantastic thing. 2021, they're making 106 grand per vehicle, but I think it's much more than that. So last year, this is financial results of 2022. I think Ferrari was making 24% margin. Tesla was making 70%. That's come right down now.
Yeah.
You know, Ford was making 4%. This is 22, which I know was a bit of a weird year. But yeah, I could probably find 23 somewhere, but we should probably crack on.
All right. I want to talk about trucks for a second, but before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
This is BVK for Ocean City Tourism, OCMD Streaming Audio. On March 11th, 2024, the title of the spot is STSA Leisure Summer. This is a 30-second composite stereo streaming audio mix.
Get away with friends to the laid-back Maryland coast, where you can catch up while casting off hang 10 while hanging out. Where a day on board is never boring. And full throttle is half the fun. Where you can sink a putt, raise a glass, and there's always room for one more round. Ocean City, Maryland. Somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, thanks for that. Ranger, talk about Ford Ranger. You just did a trip in a Ford Ranger.
Yeah, I just drove one out from LA to Sedona and back, so sort of 8 hours each way in a weekend, over 1,000 miles. It's a really good thing. We've just done a comparison test. Check it out on our YouTube channel, Ranger and Tacoma and Colorado. We're huge fans of the Colorado. It was Edmund's top rated truck this year, but Ranger is. We're going to try it in different models. So we make the definitive decision, but certainly in the version that we had. I actually preferred it to Colorado. It's just a really well executed truck. And historically, Ford's always been good at the F-150, and arguably less good at the midsize. But I think they've done a great job. There's a lot of the qualities that we like about the F-150 in a smaller size. And depending where you live in the US, I actually think this is a really good sized truck. You know, the F-150, as you know, because you drive one every day, is a unit. Whereas the Ranger is just a nice size. And, you know, we've got the Lariat FX4, so the FX4 off-road package. You've got tons of technology. So it looks like a kind of baby F-150 inside with baby Lightning inside with a vertical screen, all the CarPlay integration. It's super comfortable. The seats are superb. The ride quality, yeah, it still feels a bit trucky, but it's comfortable. It's refined. Engine's a bit coarse. We've got the 2.5-litre Turbo 4, and it's 10 speed gearbox. It still sounds a little bit kind of rough, but you know, you can't imagine doing those many miles in a truck not too long ago and it being that comfortable. It's a really nice thing. I think they've done a fantastic job.
You know, I know we brought this up before, but yes, the way these trucks have grown physically in size, my F-150 today is so much bigger than my 95 F-150. I think my 95 F-150 might be even smaller than this Ranger. You know, mostly because, you know, you guys got the crew cab, but yeah, the F-150s years ago were nowhere near what they are today. They're about the size of what Rangers are.
And in some ways, that's why. I mean, they brought the Maverick in for two reasons. They brought the Maverick in because Ford struggles to sell cars and SUVs, or particularly cars that it doesn't sell cars to people anymore, apart from the Mustang. And so you've got the Maverick, which is kind of escape size, and now you've got the Ranger, which is, you know, which is probably a sensible everyday truck. And they've also done some cool stuff, like you can now. They've played around with the wheel arches in the bed, so you can now get an 8x4 piece of plywood in.
Yeah.
So it's much more usable. We bought it's a Lariat FX4. I mean, not cheap, 51 grand. Nice of them to give us a $250 4x4 regional discount on a 51 grand truck. Always feels good.
You guys have been testing the Tacoma as well, and the Tacoma pricing came out. That's a very expensive truck.
They're all pretty expensive. I mean, arguably, I think it's the XLT, isn't it? Is the one down from the Lariat, and you know that gives you a lot of the tech as well. Lariat's just a little bit posher, and then obviously you can go up again. Yeah, we've actually now have on the Edmunds fleet, and I'm sure we can talk about more as the weeks ahead. So we now have a Tacoma, a Ranger, and a Colorado. And our objective is basically to live with them all for the next year and to tell the story of how they, you know, how they differ over the time. So we kick off in a world where actually the Toyotas arguably our least favorite. But it will be interesting to see as we go on how, you know, what the living with experience is like. Our Ranger's got a couple of irritations right from the off. It's an early truck, but they've been building them for a while elsewhere in the world. You know, you have to slam the door shut or it's giving sensor warnings. It's like the wing mirrors come in and then the right one doesn't go out. So you have to do that a couple of times. So there's a few little like build quality niggles, which are annoying. So it'll be interesting to see how they play out. But at the moment, big fans of the Ranger. It's a good thing.
I went to a Ford Ranger event in Michigan, and but that was a while ago. So there was a delay on getting the Ranger out. It feels like there was some sort of hold.
Oh yeah, there's been a huge delay on it. And I think the F-150 facelift as well was delayed. So I mean, Ford's on a real mission to sort the quality out. But then I think everybody's been struggling still. I think, you know, there's still a little bit of legacy of the pandemic, and there's just all sort, you know, it's just trying to get these things out and rolling. But finally, they are hitting the market.
The Ranger that you guys have, you have the big vertical stack infotainment system because it's the Lariat, right? And then the gauge cluster is all digital now as well.
It is. And there's a couple of nice settings in there. So you can have like a calm screen, which I kind of like. It's really like if you're just cruising down the highway, all it gives you is like how many, you know, what's your range and how fast are you going? So there's some, you know, and then you've got a few off-road gadgets, and it's, yeah, it's nice. The one I haven't driven yet, I haven't driven the fast one yet, sadly.
I've only driven the
Raptor. I've only driven the normal one, but even it's a good truck, and it's in the way that the F-150 is. This is definitely a vehicle that you could use every day and live with quite happily.
I think the Raptor is going to be impressive because they've had some time now between the original Raptor and what they've been doing with Bronco and to kind of figure out basically just more time in the dirt basically and realize what works, what doesn't work, how they're doing everything from beefing up the chassis and suspension pieces to dialing in the suspension. It just seems to get a little better each year. I think the F-150 Raptor, the only real difference between, you know, the newest version and the previous one is like maybe like a heads up display and some more calibration on the suspension. They're just trying to make it smoother overall and then better off road. And I think the Ranger Raptor gets the benefit now from the years of producing other forms of off-road Raptors.
Yeah. And I mean, it's got, just look at the spec here, 405 horsepower, it's 430 pounds feet of torque, Fox shocks. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot going on with it. It's kind of going to be interesting to see who buys it and how they, you know, how they use the vehicle. Are you actually, you know, are people going to buy it because it looks cool, or are people going to buy it because they really want to go off road? And maybe a bit of both, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe a bit of both.
And the other thing is, it's a much more usable Raptor. Like the Raptor, the F-150 Raptor is just so wide.
Yeah.
I don't care where you live. It's a handful.
Yeah, it's huge. And I've driven a few of them here around town and the TRX. And they're just, I mean, I like that sort of fun competitive thing going on between Ram and Ford.
Who can make
the most ridiculous off-road truck when it's the loudest and the most horsepower and eats the most fuel.
Yeah.
I just think it's kind of fun to do it. I'm a little surprised it took Ram as long as it did to come up with the TRX, but you know.
Yeah. The Chevy obnoxious, you know, it should just be.
Yeah. All right. So we're gonna wrap things up, but I wanted to ask you about this fancy photo you got framed behind you there, or this drawing.
It's a drawing, actually.
As you're slowly starting to turn your your living room or your office into a podcast studio.
It's not my living room. That would be bad. Yeah, that would be banned. But it was actually a 21st birthday present. It's which is a long time ago. Yeah, Senna was a bit of I was never really the guy to have like a heroes when I was growing up, but I think Senna was as close as I ever got to it. And it's 30 years since he died, which is kind of crazy. Yeah. And in 2004, I went back to Sao Paulo and did a story for Top Gear magazine, basically following his legacy. And we spent a few days in Sao Paulo, met the guy who taught him how to race karts. We met the guy who went into a favela, and he'd secretly funded this orphanage for a bunch of years, completely out of the public eye. We went to the Senna Foundation, and it was amazing. It was amazing few days, and just this kind of like charismatic authority that he had. Although there was one funny moment. I wrote a book years ago. It's on Amazon. I'm going to plug it. It's called A Drive on the Wild Side, serialized in the New York Times. There you go, on Amazon, A Drive on the Wild Side. But it's in there. But I do remember his kart instructor was a guy called Che, T-T-T-C-H-E. And his little car, I still had this kart workshop out at the Interlagos circuit where they have the Formula One to this day. And he was telling me about like how dedicated he was and how, you know, if there was a chance to go out in the rain, he was just practicing and he used to build his engines and he was hugely demanding. And this obviously when he was a kid. At the end of it all, he said, yeah, I thought Ayrton was fantastic. And he talked about when he'd come back over with, you know, with the Williams and how the car, he talked to him when he was driving for Williams and how the car was like hurting him and he was struggling with it. But then he concluded all by saying, yeah, but I actually thought as a driver, I preferred Prost. I thought it was fantastic. Just a bit of cutter. It's like, yeah, but I just thought Prost was like a smoother driver and I like smooth drivers. And this was all through a translator. It was brilliant, but it was a real privilege and a great trip. And I was always, I mean, like, you know, your Instagram these days is always full of like race. Well, my Instagram's full of old racing footage. And to watch Senna with a manual gearbox around somewhere like Monaco, you know, or even earlier when they had the Lotus with, 1,200 horsepower and a manual gearbox and stuff. I mean, they were special days. And what the guys do today is incredible. But, and yes, you're right. I think Netflix has got something coming out, haven't they? Which
is... Yeah, so Netflix, instead of doing a feature film, the Senna story is going to be done as a 6-part miniseries. This is not a documentary. This is not a docuseries. This is a little bit of fiction here, a little bit of Hollywood, but this is instead of Ford v Ferrari, instead of, you know, Matt Damon doing a feature film, they're doing a miniseries with it. So it should be kind of interesting to see. And they released the trailer for it. So if you find Netflix, if you just search for Senna Netflix, probably on YouTube, you'll see the trailer. But they haven't given us the exact date. It's just going to come out. They said 2024. It looks good. Should be an interesting story. I think we had a really good movie with Ford v Ferrari. I think we had sort of a mediocre movie with the Adam Driver Ferrari movie, which you need to see. If you haven't seen it yet, you should see it anyway. And then we'll get Senna later this year as a 6-part miniseries. So it should be kind of fun. I'm excited.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how positive, you know, like they were this scene. Because the guy, you know, there was also sort of flaws to his personality, like we all have. So it'd be interesting to see how they do that. And of course, the Senna movie was pretty epic as well. But that was a collection of old documentary footage. Yeah, that was a sort of the piece together old footage. But yeah, it's amazing stuff. And amazing the sort of impact that he had on the country. I remember actually going into the favela and Honda, we'd approached Honda as a kind of conduit to, they had certain relationships and everything else. So Honda helped us set the story up, and it was a lot of work. And they gave us a bulletproof car, myself and the photographer. And we drove into the favela and they rolled down the rear windows where we were sat were fixed, but they rolled down they put the windows down the front. And I was like, isn't this kind of like counterintuitive?
You just made it not bulletproof.
No, and they said, like, if you drive into the area where we were going, and bear in mind this is 2004, so this has got a long time ago, so basically you wind down the windows in the front and put the interior light on. And they said the reason we do this, even though we're in a bulletproof car, is this is the way to basically say we are not a threat and we are just passing through and we're good people. And apparently a few days before, somebody had driven into the driven in, forgotten to put the interior light on, and all hell broke loose. So it was amazing few days. One of those kind of unforgettable few days. So
how old were you when you did this?
Well, 2004, I was what would I be? 27, something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm old now, Matt. You should know that. I'm old now.
No, I mean,
I was born in 77. So when was that? 2004. Yeah, I'd be 27 or something.
Nice to see you didn't get shot.
Well, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing people. And I should say as well, I was talking about that, but like going into the favela and meeting all the people in this kind of orphanage and everything else, they were amazing. It was an amazing people and amazing story. So it was really, I only have positive memories of it.
Yeah, it's good. And I like the drawing you got behind you now, which kind of sparked.
Yeah, that's thing. My, that's like, yeah,
I don't remember what was up there before that you took down and swapped out.
My wife keeps threatening to redecorate this room, but for now it's staying in. I never smoked, but if I had smoked, I'd have smoked Marlboro after Senna. So
yeah, after Senna, but
probably can't say that now.
Nah, smoking's bad. All right, we're going to wrap things up. You guys can, of course, always go to edmunds.com and you can get your car reviews and you can see all the good stuff that these guys are doing, all of the videos. The video that you mentioned about the Ranger and the Tacoma and the Colorado.
We also have we talked about it last week, my Hyundai Ioniq 5N video, which, yeah, if you can bear more of my voice, that's going live. Well, it'll be live May the 3rd, which is today, our time.
Yes.
And we've just done a group test, which again, we talked a bit about last week, of the Camry Accord and Hyundai Elantra. And on my own Instagram, I'm about to put live, which is kind of funny. I had a huge moment in the Ioniq 5, so I'm going to try and cut that up and put my own Instagram, which is Weaver on Cars. So maybe we could share that on the CarCast thing as well.
Yeah, no, that'll be fun to do. I want to see what kind of antics you got into while you were out there. And those of you listening to the podcast, if you want to see us or see some of the visuals we put up on the screen, we're putting the shows up on YouTube. It's on the CarCast YouTube channel as well. And in there are links to my social media, Alistair's social media as well. So you guys can always follow us from there. Yeah, cool. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend. Until next time, keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.
Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Transform your home in one weekend and get big savings on everything for your project at Menards. Menards carries the largest selection of Purdy painting tools you need to get your painting project started. From brushes, paint, roller covers, and even paint kits. Hurry in and save big money on Purdy painting supplies. Get everything you need for your painting project at Menards. Plus, check out Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big.